In 2011, the CDC put up a blog post called Preparedness 101, Zombie Apocalypse. It made the case that if you could protect yourself from the living dead, you could survive a fire or an earthquake. Within minutes of its publication, the CDC's website crashed. The post trended on Twitter worldwide, and even the media covered it in the news. The CDC had tried a very crazy approach, humor, to solving a very serious problem, emergency preparedness. You may be thinking, wow, what a rousing success. It went viral. But actually, it became a case study for public communications everywhere because it had very, very unintended results.
Are you ready to change your tomorrow and start feeling good again? You're in the right place. Grab your coffee and together, let's start doing wellness differently. I'm Heather Young, a certified personal trainer.
And I'm Jennifer Klutz, a registered dietitian nutritionist. Join us for conversations that will inspire you to ask better questions, remove the overwhelm, and discover what you can do to change your health now.
Welcome to the Critical Conversations Podcast.
So, what were the unintended consequences? We want to know.
Well, sad violins are playing on this one because when they look to see if that viral campaign actually got people to take action, it did not. And other humorous campaigns like that also failed because humor and entertainment did not result in a sense of importance or in a serious perspective that would be like, I have to take action on this.
So they discovered humor doesn't work. I mean, the CDC went viral. Let's start with that. Like, boring old CDC, they managed to put together a campaign that went viral. And in the social media world, for the defense for why we all need to be on social and social media can't go away, right, is it's such a great place to get educated and a great place to connect. And but for the CDC's angle, right, they want to save lives. They want people to be prepared for emergencies. And we live in California. We have now learned to be prepared for fire season because we've actually experienced having to evacuate our house. And it was the most insane experience that I have ever had to know that you might come back to ashes. And so I no longer flippantly think, oh, I need to be prepared for fire season. It's no, you need to be prepared for fire season. It really does happen. So the CDC has the same perspective of, right, we want to save lives. We want people to be prepared for emergencies because it can make the difference between whether or not they make it through or don't make it through. And they achieved their endeavor of a viral post. And it didn't save any lives because no one took any action.
Yeah, the value point is, did people think it was important? Did they think it was serious enough to take action on it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because they also did another campaign on, it was testing your water for radon. And no one does it. No one goes and gets the simple test and finds out if their water is safe or if their water is not safe and they need to do something about it. And they could never make any headway on this. But the way they did was exposure to the information and then making it easy and simple. Look, all you do is go get the test and dump some water in and mail it off and you're good to go. You'll get your results. And then from there, convincing them that it was important, that if they didn't do it in these areas, they could be unknowingly harming their family or harming their health. Like, people didn't understand that it had long-term consequences to not just do the test. But then still, to get them to do it, they had to say, you just go do this simple thing. Getting people to take action on information is this multifaceted, complex thing, and social media is not the answer because social media is its own multifaceted, complex thing. And today, we really want to dive into what ways does social media impact how you take care of yourself and take action on care tasks and take care of your health.
Yeah, because from what we're seeing, from our professional perspective, and even just being a social media user ourselves, which we have reduced significantly. We may start popping our head more into social media now that we have a little bit more time, but we may not. But what we see from our perspective, and this is just based on our perspective, is that people are getting inundated with so much information and so much conflicting information. You get to the point where it's analysis paralysis. You don't know what you should do. But then on top of that, I think a big piece of being an empowered user with social media is understanding how the algorithm works. Because I think for the average user, they don't really care about the algorithm because they don't have a business.
Yes.
To me, understanding the algorithm, quote unquote, is language and conversations that happens between business owners, because you are trying to get a post to reach more people. You're trying to get your business exposure. But someone who's just using social media to consume or to inform or to connect, I don't think they're thinking, how is this algorithm targeting me? Having people know, are you aware of all these different ways that social media is inadvertently using your information, your likes, your saves, your eyeballs to target you on things that you may not even be interested in, but it believes it is based on how it's set up.
Yes. So a few really important things with how the algorithm works is very early on in social media, they knew that if they could get you to spend time there, one, they'd win against all the other social media platforms who were competing for your time. And so they wanted to be the one where you were the happiest. You got the most brain highs and dopamine so that you would choose their social media platform. And they also wanted you on there longer so they could show you more ads, which is where the money came in. And they can only show you two ads if you're in there 15 minutes, but they can show you so many more if they just, you know, get you into a doom scrolling spiral where you're there 2 hours.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Number one is social media is not there to make your life better. Social media is there because they want to sell to you. And understanding this distinction for what you're using it for, like what you believe you're using it for, how they're pitching it to you, is not actually what it's there for. The feel good is, oh, you get to connect with your friends. You get to meet new people. You're not going to be so lonely. That's the sell. The reality is they're going, how do we get one more person to sign up for one more person to purchase based on the ads that we are selling through this platform?
Yes, because they are immediately and very aggressively curating content for your attention. They're working to hijack your attention the moment you log on. And so they're watching, what is this person liking? What is this person saving? What are they pausing on? So something that you don't even end up saving or liking, but you spend time reading or looking at, it says, we gained more time with this user. They stopped and looked at it. Maybe let's try again and send them something else like it. And the whole thing is designed to keep you hooked and to keep your attention. So this gets really tricky as soon as you are someone who's trying to be a savvy social media user and wanting to take care of your health and wanting to use information really well. And so right away, with just the exposure of repeat messages, because it's picking up on, oh, they liked it, they paused on it, or they saved it, let's send them more. The first time you see some kind of negative body image message or something that isn't serving you or isn't positive for you, you may win that battle, but you did pause and you won that battle, but the algorithm has now tagged it as something to send you more often to test if you'll watch it again or look at it again or pause it on it again. And so you're setting yourself up to fight repeat battles over content and how you're going to consume it, because you're in a system that's just analyzing your attention and trying to keep it.
Yeah, which is why it's helpful to know that, where you can start to get a little confused, where you go, why am I getting another post on this? I'm not interacting with these posts, but they keep being in my search feed or randomly suggested to me. And it is from this factor that many people are unaware of, which is if you just pause, if you just hesitate, if your eyes even stay on it for 3 seconds, you will be targeted again with similar content that matches that. The most helpful tool against this, from being suddenly inundated with information you don't want or topics that you don't want, is also being made aware of the fact that you can click on the 3 little dots somewhere around the post and it says, I don't want to see more posts like this, or you can start blocking that content. That is the best solution for starting to cultivate a healthier social media feed is hitting that button that says, I don't want to see any more content like this. And many people aren't even aware that they can do that.
Yeah, it's a really empowering tool to use to say like, nope, please don't show me this. And so that algorithm that's analyzing you constantly and trying to decide what to send you is also increasing something called frequency illusion, which does really matter when it comes to health information and how you're choosing to consume information about taking care of yourself. Because once you get that first pause or that first save, or you're contemplating something, this is something I should look into, maybe I want to do this, you're going to get inundated with it because now the algorithm knows it has your attention on that. But then with the frequency illusion, it starts to make it look like everyone thinks this, or everyone's talking about this information, or this is what all the experts are saying. And so it gives an overimportance to one health idea very quickly. And then either you give it more weight, more truth, and more value than it should have, or on the other hand, you feel more left out and more pressured to try it because everyone's doing it and you're not, because it looks and feels that way because it's just the algorithm targeting what it thinks is content that you're consuming.
And it could be targeting you with just the exact 20 posts that were ever made on the topic. And you just believe now it's a meaningful topic. But if you look at the billions of posts, that was it. That's all there was. The best example I think that people usually use to describe this illusion is when you decide that you're going to buy a red car and say you're driving a black one, and then you even pick the make and the type of the car, and then as you're driving around, because you have decided what kind of car you're going to buy and that it should be red, that as you drive around, suddenly you will see the car that you are planning on buying in the color that you want. Because now you've been made aware of it, where you were driving around before and you would have said the car, it wasn't a popular car at all. I never noticed it before. Exactly. You never noticed it before because your attention was not on it. Yeah. And now that your attention is on it, now you believe it's popular. Now you believe everyone drives it. And even that can drive decision making to a new direction where suddenly you're like, well, maybe I'm not going to get this car anymore. I guess it's not a unique choice.
I think it really is helpful just to start to be aware of that, where you can understand how your attention is being manipulated. It also does, unfortunately, play into how we weigh information for its truthfulness, because they can show in research that the more often you see something, even if it is incorrect or it's not true, if you've seen it a lot, you're more likely to say it is true and think it is true. Social media really pushes into that, where you can get some pretty wild health claims that then seem true because you've seen them so much because of the way the algorithm operates. And so when you're on social media, you just have to ask yourself more frequently, how do I know this is true? Where do I feel they got this information from? And it saves a lot of time and money in chasing down health actions or potential products or ways of thinking that actually aren't vetted or rooted in something that can have you the biggest bang for your buck and get you the most healthy change that you're looking for.
Yeah, because the other factor that I think builds on this misconception that bad information is good information is the driving factor that more and more people now do want to go viral. Whether you're running a business, you want to go viral, you know.
You're an influencer.
You're an influencer, you want to go viral. I think this is not something we would have ever thought of 10 years ago. But I especially think in the younger generation, a life goal is probably to become viral on some level. I think the percentage there is growing by the minute. And so what you get is people copying viral content. So they go, oh my gosh, this person went viral talking about the fact that broccoli can kill you. And I kind of believe it. And it was so popular. I'm going to do it too. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to do the same type of thing and just put my own spin on it, not because it's valid, not because it's good information, but because they just want to go viral. Just because something went viral, one, does not mean it's good information, and two, it's remembering that people copy and they're going to reproduce what they think you want because they themselves are trying to go viral.
There have been a lot of people who've put a lot of time into putting together clips showing how influencers, health influencers, fitness influencers will copy the words on the screen
verbatim,
not even a the or a period different, and they will copy what they say verbatim. Some of this is because they're actually using content farms to just buy content to put up, and that's how the content farm does it, and so everyone does it. And the other one is exactly what you just said. They're copying something they think will be highly successful to give them exposure, and so they direct copy it. And when your brain starts to see 20 people say the exact same thing the exact same way, that the first time you heard it, it just sounded life-changing and groundbreaking, makes you realize, wait a second, there's a lot less novelty to this information, and there's also a lot less goodwill than I think there is. And there's plenty of good people on social media, but the exception does not break the rule. And the rule is most people with something to sell are absolutely manipulating your attention. And those clips, I think, really bring that front and center.
Yeah, our attention is being completely hijacked. But I think the thing that really just took this off the charts is the infinite scroll.
Absolutely. Because we know people spend hours on it every day. And the reason it's easy to spend hours on it is because you just keep rolling through content with a flip of the finger.
Yeah, I think the last article I read said that the average adult is now on social 2 to 3 hours a day.
Yes.
And that's staggering.
It's such a significant amount of time. And so in addition to the attention, the time with that infinite scroll is exponentially pushed out because you're scrolling and your brain is getting dopamine, which is, you know, that feel-good thing of joy and satisfaction that we want to feel in our brains. But social media took the regular little pieces of dopamine we would get through everyday life, and it just turned it into a fire hose.
Yeah, dopamine is what you get when you fall in love. Mm-hmm. And this is why people seem like they forget everyone else in the room when they fall in love. It's literally this fact, the dopamine factor. And that's why at some point, the love has to diminish or you die.
Because you never take care of yourself.
Your dopamine, yeah, it's too much for the brain. It starts to kill you. So it has to diminish.
Yes. And we're currently living in a time right now where we have an unlimited dopamine source that we can all dive into. And not every piece of content gives you dopamine, but your brain knows it can give you dopamine. And so it keeps scrolling to find the next piece that gives you dopamine, which is then you're like, I'll just be in here 5 more minutes. It wants the next hit of dopamine, the next thing that makes you laugh. And then you didn't find anything. You're like, I'll be in here 5 more minutes because your brain wants it. It's looking for it.
And this is exactly why people, quote unquote, fall out of love. This elephant in the room that people don't want to talk about, it's also brain chemistry related. Because if you only associate love with the off-the-charts dopamine levels that you had when you initially fell in love, which are not sustainable, I'm not making it up.
If you die
if you stay at that dopamine level. It's not – you can't stay there. Then if you believe that that's what you should always be feeling, then you're going to start to create a narrative or a story around that. Oh, I don't feel like this, that's not the definition of love. Dopamine is not the only way that you express or show love or that your brain needs to have love. But if you're not made aware of that, that it's not just this feeling from when you initially fall in love.
Puppy love.
It's a way to destroy meaningful relationships.
Yes. And it also just destroys how we take care of ourselves, because we used to get the reward center of the brain light up when we did care tasks and achieved the life task we need. And it's a low level, but now our brain is comparing it to the fire hose that is social media. And it's much more palatable to be in social media. It's kind of like, think it as like you give yourself a really good meal, which is satiating and nice. That's a nice hit of dopamine versus going to an endless buffet and then you're just getting great meal after great meal after great meal after great meal after great meal. And then eventually you're just sick. It's too much.
Yeah, the consequences of that would be a giant bellyache and most likely ending up in the bathroom.
But our brain is getting that with these huge chunks of time that we're spending on social media and just lighting it up with dopamine.
But I think that's the goal within this, is someone knows that if they just keep eating at a buffet, that they're going to end up ill. And even if they didn't know it first, the first time you do it to yourself, where you overeat food and then you are ill or you get that giant bellyache. And in fact, some bellyaches are so bad that you never want to eat that food again.
Significant
emotional event. I mean, I have clients that refuse to eat foods because they're like, oh no, once when I was a kid, I ate 27 olives and that's it. I just can't look at them again. I understand that they're health food and they're good for me, and that's not happening. And it's funny, right? But look at how that feedback has impacted the choice. So they learned something from that learned experience. I don't think that people are learning from their social experiences yet. They're not connecting all the dots of how it's impacting how they are able to take care of themselves and their health, which is why we are having this conversation.
Yes, because it's like social media is giving you the sick reaction the olives did. And if you remember, if you think back to the first time you were motionless, sitting, totally sedentary on social media, and you did it for hours and you looked up, you were like, ugh, and you did not feel good. You were dehydrated. You had moved your body. You physically feel sick. But it's like we can't connect it to that's what made us feel like that, and we do it again. So at least your clients with the olives figured out it was the olives and just won't eat the olives.
Well, because it's a negative feedback loop. Right now, social is giving us a positive feedback loop.
Right.
And that's the problem. It's we're trying to – our goal with this is for you to be able to start to connect the negative feedback loops that you haven't associated with social.
Yes, there are some direct ones that are – fully impacting how you take care of yourself and how easy it is to take care of yourself. And I think that's the most important takeaway is it's these obvious things that we think of with social media, but there are less obvious ways that's directly impacting our care.
Yeah. And from our perspective, there are three ways that people are being impacted with their ability to take care of themselves based on social media.
Yeah. Our time management, our energy levels, and then our ability to take action are all being manipulated with, and it's directly impacting our self-care.
Yeah, so to unpack those a little bit more, our time management, what does that mean? Basically, the average adult currently is estimated to be on social media about 2 to 3 hours a day. And so if you're on social for that much time, right? And I get that some people are on social during their lunch break, but what we're commonly seeing is, I would say, social media is becoming the way to relax at the end of the day. And for a lot of people, you are losing that hour or 2 hours when you ideally before would be prepping for your next day or doing something that takes care of you, whether or not it's going for a walk, whether or not it's doing a workout, whether or not it's making a home-cooked meal instead of picking one up, or taking the time to prep your breakfast, taking the time to prep your lunch the next day. And instead, you're scrolling. And then by the time you come out of scrolling, your time has been hijacked and you're running around like a crazy person just trying to catch up with the bare minimum before you go to bed.
And when you came home, you had the time to do really great things to take care of yourself or renew your body, mind, and spirit from the workday. And instead, then you have no time. And it really would be impactful to start noting how many of the evenings where you feel like you don't have the time to do things you would do, whether that's cooking food or prepping a lunch or, you know, getting a workout in or something, went to you sitting on social media because you sat on the couch, you had that moment of transition and fatigue. You're like, I'm just going to be in here a few minutes because your brain wanted the electric energizing high of dopamine. And then it got it and you stayed in there and it ate all your time.
Yeah, because the hard part within that then is then if we do not have a lot of positive internal narrative, then get really stuck in this negative feedback loop of being mad at yourself. Or why can't I ever get enough stuff done? Why am I not taking action on this? Why do I keep saying I will do this, but then I don't actually do it? And being able to take a step back and give yourself the gift of analyzing where is my time going instead of from a judgmental lens and instead from curiosity of, you know what? Let me take some time to figure out how come I'm losing so much time. And are there answers for me to find it where I can start being able to take action on these things that I keep talking about or that are frustrating me and not the best within my own head and how I'm saying them? Just looking at it from a curious angle and discovering, what is it? Is there a way for you to gain time? Because the answer is some people don't have a way to gain time. They're not even on social media.
This is not for you.
Right. But so the reality is we interact with and work with a lot of people who are losing a lot of time to social. And you have the option to say, do I want to continue to allow this? Or do I want to check in and see what's my unique consumption? And the thing is, if you have a smartphone, it's no longer ambiguous. You don't even have to take the time to do it yourself. All you need to do is go check how many hours of time do you spend on any social and add it all up. Because the reason why we're losing so much time and even more is because there's so many different social platforms to pick from. So you might be getting yourself out of Instagram in 20 minutes, but then you're going into TikTok for 30 minutes or 45 minutes. And then you're leaving TikTok and you're like, well, let me just make sure no one messaged me on Facebook. And then you're going into Facebook. And then you're leaving Facebook and then you're going into your email, which doesn't count necessarily as social, but it's still going to be taking your time because now suddenly you're just in check it mode. And let's see what everyone's up to. And then email usually falls into the whole, oh, well, I better go see.
And when you add it all up, it's a significant amount of time. So this week, you could actually take the time to check in, pull up those numbers and say, how much time am I giving to social media? Is it a good amount that I'm happy with? Or is it something I could improve on and I could get myself time to do the life stuff and take care of yourself?
Do the kit test, take a shower, brush your teeth, go for a walk, prep a lunch, prep a breakfast, or even just have a minute to sit on the couch and do nothing.
Which is pretty good for our brain health and our emotional health and our whole entire well-being.
So on top of time, our endless scrolling is impacting how we take care of ourselves by stealing our focus and attention. So we kind of already talked about how it's happening, but the impact of it that we see from someone taking care of themselves is your ability to scroll past tasks, quote unquote. So social media is changing our attention and our brains. It's allowing us to start to believe that we can leave tasks. We can just scroll past it. We can stop reading mid-sentence if we're over it. It's oops, gone. And this is, you start to look at how are you able to pay attention, like at work or to when someone's talking, you might start to realize that maybe you don't pay as much attention anymore or as well. Or a common one that we're seeing is you're leaving tasks undone. So you started packing a lunch and then you go, oh, you know what? I haven't taken the garbage out. And then you take the garbage out and then you didn't remember that you were actually in the middle of packing your lunch. And this is happening more and more because social media is teaching our brains that it can disconnect from tasks because you can quit something like midpoint, mid-video. You just get to move past it.
And it sounds a lot like ADD behavior.
Yeah.
Where you can, you know, you're the goldfish, you forgot what you were doing on the way to do the next thing, and then you see the thing and you do the thing. But this is different. And I think it's why we are seeing a little bit more of an uptick. It's playing a role for sure.
Well, they know it. If you already have a tendency towards those behaviors, it's going to put them on speed.
Yeah, they happen even more. But I do see this. It's not just ADHD. It is our regular brains. The regular person is having more of an experience like this because of the cultivated feedback loop of just opt out, just quit it, just don't do it, just leave it. So it overall, it's not a good reward system for our body to think that if a care task is hard or something we don't want to be doing is not highly full of joy and pleasure that we get to just swipe away from it and do something else.
Yeah, I think that's the big part about it is if we already didn't love a task, it's because we can just leave a video we don't love or a post we don't love. And they are showing this. Like research is starting to show this. It's not definitive. But they're starting to say, okay, our attention is changing because of this factor. that our brains are being told that you don't have to keep paying attention. Which kind of is also scary because we're going to culturally completely change how our brains work. That's what when I read some of the new studies that are coming out and they're saying, yeah, it's teaching your brain that you can leave a task. It's gone. You kind of go, that's not cool.
I'm actually watching for this now because I have more of those tendencies anyway. And I do find it's having a direct impact on my sense of accomplishment, my ability to finish things, to say it's just a swipe moment where I'm just because it's not interesting, I want to leave it.
Then an unrealistic expectations for how long it should be taking.
Yes.
Because we've minimized things down to an 8-second soundbite.
Yeah.
Where, oh, goodness, this is taking 30 seconds.
Yeah. Brain is definitely getting pushed to a speedier and speedier level of interaction with the world.
Yes. So what I commonly see with this also from a nutrition related aspect is I think people are losing their perceptions for how long eating should take. Mm-hmm. And it's driving this whole narrative eating takes too long. Because they're, especially if you don't have your phone, I think people are so used to distracted eating, first of all, which is problematic in and of itself for just your long-term health, your digestion, your body's ability to process food, right? We already had massive distraction problems with the act of eating. So eating used to be one of the best ways we got dopamine, right? It's a dopamine reward system, right? Tasty food, you're going to love it. You're going to want to be doing it. We like it. And what I'm commonly interacting with more and more in this subtle world is people actually asking me to help them to figure out how to like the act of eating.
That is pretty significant. So for everyone, another thing you can pay attention to this week is, am I just trying to opt out of things or speed things up or get to that infinite scroll in my life and in my job and in my care tasks where it might be making me feel a little bit more scattered or like I'm not completing things? And you just need to observe and see what comes up for you uniquely. For me, it was a game changer.
The last place that social media could be really impacting your ability to take care of yourself is by sucking your energy away from you. So scrolling, just that act, is really...
it's more work than it feels like. It feels like you're just relaxing, swiping, scrolling, but that's not the case. Your brain is actually having to analyze the information, make a decision about it. And then the more expensive decision is, am I going to choose to like it or share it with someone or send it to someone? When they measure your brain action, you're less likely to have brain activity or the ability to complete a task if you had to think about if you were going to share something or like something. So it's draining your decision-making power and it's draining just your overall brain's energy level. And then it's draining your eyes, your body's energy level, from the fact that your eyes have to focus on the video or the image and make a decision about it and send the information to your brain. And then they relax as you scroll. They let go of that focus. You're scrolling up the next thing. And then zoom, they focus in again. And a good way to imagine it is if the whole time you're scrolling, I saw someone else describe it this way. They said, if you did a bicep curl, that's the focus of your eyes, and then released it, and then it did another bicep curl and released it, but you did that the entire time you were scrolling on social media, your arm would be exhausted. You would actually stop being on social media because your arm was so tired from the bicep curl, which is the focus on the image, and then the release for a quick second. It's really tiring, but we do that to our eyes and to our brain the whole time that we're scrolling on social media.
Yeah, and then we're unaware why we might be fatigued.
Yes.
So a constant narrative is, I'm just so tired. I'm just so tired. And often we're not realizing how much of our time and attention social media is taking away from us and how tiring that is.
Yeah, it's taking our energy too. And it's taking our energy too because, quite frankly, physics doesn't lie. A body in motion stays in motion. The best way to manage your energy is not to be sitting on a couch for 2 or 3 straight hours. Like, every system in the body is down regulating. your muscles are not firing. You're not using your entire posterior chain to stand. It's significant in how it sends this feedback to the body that it's an energized in motion organism versus it's not and it's sitting. So by the time you get the brain energy, the eye energy, your decision-making energy, and just your physical energy, plus the dehydration that affects your energy levels because the whole time you're sitting there, you're most likely not drinking something, which is why I've seen more social media companies, including TikTok, say, this is your reminder for a water break. It's their little way of acting like they care and being like, hey, let's remind you to drink water. But guess what? It's a real problem. Most people get dehydrated with the amount of time that they spend on social media.
Yeah, a real problem. And I think this also falls into the lack of understanding of how the body burns energy. Because what I commonly interact with is most people don't understand how much energy their body burns just sitting, being unaware of it, just plays right into the barrier we already had for people not fueling their bodies correctly and going way too long without eating. And I think this is just doubling down on the chronic narrative of I am just so tired.
It's true. Social media is affecting our energy and it's making us tired. And honestly, life's too short to go through it tired. And that may be the first reason that you feel inspired to check in on how social media is impacting you. And as we wrap up here, that's our challenge for you this week. You have the option to check in and start to notice, how is my time on social media affecting me? Is it taking away my ability to focus? Is it taking away my attention where I just want to swipe out of everything in my day or at my job? Is it taking away your energy, or is it just taking away time that you need in order to do all those care tasks that are so important for your well-being long-term? Be intentional. You can fight the infinite scroll. You can fight the endless dopamine, and you can take back social media as a tool that you can use on your health journey that doesn't end up stealing from your health or changing the way you take care of yourself. We're so glad you spent time with us listening to today's episode. We hope you were inspired, or you were able to laugh, or you learned something new. It would mean a lot to us if you would just take a moment and either leave a 5-star review or a written review for the podcast. It truly helps it grow and helps these messages reach other people. And lastly, be kind to yourself in the process of change.